Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am John Milford, chair of the club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience. We invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Linda Fridrini Johnson. Linda has been a family therapist and professional geriatric care manager in the San Francisco Bay Area for the past 21 years and has been executive director of Elder Care Services and is current president of the National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers. This is quite an accomplishment. This is a field that started when Linda started being a care manager, and now she's leading the association nationwide. So join me in welcoming Linda Fridrini Johnson.
I'll stand up here so I can see all of you and start with this subject, the Great Debate. And the Great Debate, which I titled this talk, is not with me and someone else debating what is better, moving to retirement living or staying in your own home or downsizing and still staying independent. But the great debate is within yourself. And I'm going to take you on a journey, a quick journey, and I'm going to give you a whole lot of information in a short period of time. So for the people in the audience tonight, have a pen available and write down your question. So at the end of me talking about a lot of different options and a lot of different ideas that you might not have heard of before, you'll be able to ask me that question that you have on your mind. Or if you come this evening with a question, write that down now so you leave with it getting that question answered. So I begin the talk with, how does one come to a decision about where to live in retirement? You know, what is it that's pulling you to look at your options? Is it life change? Are you a widower or a widow? Have all your friends or family moved a distance? Is what was important to you where you live now not longer part of your community? Has your health status changed where staying in your home makes it challenging for you to live there safely or comfortably? Is there something in your health? Or have you a diagnosis that's a long-term diagnosis that will propel you into needing more care in the future? Maybe not now, but maybe 5 years from now. So you want to look at your options early in that journey. Is it family? Again, are all of your children and grandchildren living in another area and you miss that family and you want to be closer to them? That seems to be a very common reason people make major moves. Of course, then those children end up moving too and you're moving again. But I'm going to take you on again on an exercise of looking at what's important to you before you make this decision. Travel. If you like to travel a lot and you've looked towards retirement to be a time to see the world, having to worry about a home or maintain a home sometimes is a reason why people downsize or move to another option of living in the retirement years. Volunteer activity. I know that's something my husband and I look forward to as we get near our retirement years, of going into foreign countries and doing some volunteer activity. And maybe you want to dedicate your whole next chapter of your life to doing that, and you don't want to maintain a big home. Hobbies or new interest. There's a whole community of people living in Mexico now, retirees, and I know that there are artist colonies. And so if art is something you wanted to pursue as you retired, you might choose to leave your home and go someplace that, again, you have passion about and another level of interest for you that you've put on hold during the first 60 years of your life or 70 years of your life and you now want to develop. Home maintenance. That's a big issue for many people, especially single people, to have to deal with roofs and windows and gardens, and just maintaining a home takes a lot of energy and financial resources as well. And then there are financial reasons. It's expensive to live in a home, and it might not be a good time to sell your home. We have got the economy facing us at the same time. So it could be a financial reason to stay and a financial reason to move. You might have all of your assets tied up in the equity of your house. A lot of people, especially in the San Francisco Bay Area, are property rich and cash poor. There are ways of getting money from your equity to keep you in your home, but it could be a financial reason. You want to cash in on that equity. You want to travel with your money. You want to do something else with that asset, and that would be a reason why you would choose, could be a reason why you would choose another level of living. What or who is encouraging you the change? This is a really important question. I have two important questions, and this is, for me, the second highest value of the questions. Have you come to this crossroad on your own? Have you come to this decision to look at your options in housing because you're having worries or you're having interests that you own, that no one else has put upon you? So look at that. Think about that. Is your family pushing you to make a move or a major change? As a geriatric care manager, I've worked with older adults and their families for the past, actually, 25 years in the Bay Area. And I remember a daughter calling me. Daughter lived in San Francisco. Mom was in Rossmore. And she said, Linda, you have to help me find assisted living for my mom. She's 80, that's young now. She's 80 years old, and she lives alone, and she doesn't drive anymore, and I'm just worried about her. So I went to see her mom, and her mom was happy where she lived. Yes, she lived alone, and yes, she was 80, and she did have macular degeneration, and her vision was impaired somewhat. The only thing she needed from me, and the daughter needed, was an emergency response system. You know, the button that you push, and now these buttons are even more sophisticated, and I'll talk about them later as I talk about options to stay in the home. But she needed that, and she needed a driver to take her shopping and take her to events that she found important and gave value and meaning to her life. So once the daughter had that taken care of, the daughter was more comfortable with leaving mom at home. So sometimes it's the family, because a person is a certain age, thinking they should move. Mom should move, dad should move, or sometimes it's a spouse. One spouse wants to move and the other doesn't. That's where marital counseling comes into play, which I am both a marriage counselor, family counselor, and a geriatric care manager. So I've helped couples also come to the decision of what's going to work for them. Is your physician telling you that it's time to move to a supportive environment? And physicians often do this with progressive illnesses, or they see people being rehospitalized over and over again. They see that person is resistant to bringing help in the home, or maybe they don't know how to bring help in the home. And so they tell that individual they need to move. And physicians are well-meaning in this advice, but often the physician doesn't know all the resources in the community. And one of the things that we all have in the San Francisco Bay Area is a wealth of technology, support services, community services that help us stay independent in our own home. But the physician isn't aware of those. So hopefully I'm going to expand your education so you know where to find resources and that there are resources and technologies that help keep people at home safer and longer. This is my most important concept this evening, and that I really, really want you to hold on to. And how do you look at this decision? What are your values? I want you to go on an inward journey, and I'm going to take you on a little exercise in a minute. What do you value in this life? What is your purpose? Dr. Oz, everybody knows Dr. Oz, he's a character. There was a great article in last month's AARP magazine. I think probably all of us in this room get it. We all made that mark, that 50 mark. My mother signed me up for it. So why did I get this? You're old, she said. Now she wonders. She has a daughter this age. She's 88 and lives alone in San Francisco in her own home, the home I grew up in. And that's an okay decision for her right now. But what gives your life value and what gives your life meaning? Whatever decision you make, whether it's to stay in your home or to move to a retirement living option, any of the options that I'm going to talk about, or you want to create an option, that's always a possibility as well, should be based on what gives meaning to your life and purpose. And Dr. Oz talks about purpose, knowing what your purpose is. And in his example, he's thinking of working adults, and maybe some of you in this room, like me, are still working. And he says to draw a box, put an amoeba in the middle of the box represents your job, and how much of that amoeba goes outside the box, and where does it go? Is it art? Is it hiking? Is it being with family? Is it volunteering? Where is your interest? Where is your passion? Whatever decision you make, you want to make sure that this is part of that decision. So what gives your life value, what gives your life meaning, is going to be extremely important in your decision-making process. And what would you like to do with the rest of your life? As I mentioned before, my husband and I hope to, at some point, if we ever get to retire, to do some volunteerism and do it in foreign countries. I'm being real creative here. I'd love to go to Haiti and build a school. I don't know if I could do that, but and that's way off. I probably have never told my husband that. He just heard it from the first time tonight. But, you know, we all have these inner kinds of, I want to make a difference. I want to do something. Or maybe, again, maybe it's writing your memoirs. Maybe you had the most incredible childhood. I don't know what it is. Everyone in this room has something that's unique and special about you. And maybe you've not had time to put to that or energy to put to that, and this might be that time that you develop that new interest. One of the big trends with the baby boomers is second careers. John, wherever you are, John mentioned that in, during the opening, is a second career. Maybe it is that art teacher that you wanted to be and never were because you're a CPA, but you have this passion for art. My husband is a woodworker. He's building a shop. So as he retires, he's going to build furniture. That's his passion. He loves it. He can't wait to get to it. Hopefully he spends some time doing it now, because you can't put off tomorrow what you can do today. And that's another story as well. So what does your current home mean to you? That's another really important question. These are inner journey questions I'm giving you. What does that house mean to you? Does it have a meaning? Did you struggle to buy that house? I remember a woman I worked with early in my career as a care manager who came here from the South, opened up a, she was a hairdresser, opened up her own business and saved every dime she had to be able to buy that house. That house meant so much for her. It meant her whole life. She just worked so hard for that house. It was everything for her. So what is the meaning of that house to you now? Who do you want to spend more time with? You know, I included in the packet that the people that are in the audience have one of my newsletters, and it's about companionship. We know it's really important to our health and the quality of our life to be in relationship with another person, not just an intimate relationship with a husband or wife or a partner. It could be a friend. It could be somebody that you haven't met yet. Relationships are really important. Who is it that you want to spend more time with? What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us, as Emerson said, and not Linda. Wise man. But it's an important concept or quote to think about. It's not where you've been or where you're going, but what you have in your home is you. It's kind of people with dementia, that's one of the areas that I do have a specialty in, but often say when they're in their own home, they want to go back home. That's where you know where everything is. You know where the measuring cup is. You know where the bathroom is. You know where the bath towels are. You know where the dog food is. You just, home represents comfort, containment, and it is within us often. Somebody with dementia, it's a different journey. It really means something that's familiar to them. Staying home versus moving to a retirement community. What do you enjoy about your current home environment? And for those who are listening, I want you to make a list. And on the left side of the worksheet or your list, you're going to write a list of all the things you enjoy about staying in your current home. And on the left side, the things that you don't enjoy about your home. And I do have a list that I started. And next to those items on your list, I want you to write an E or a P if it's an emotional reason, and I'll give you some examples. What do I enjoy about living in my own home? Easy transportation and bus lines. I grew up in San Francisco, and God, you can get anywhere in San Francisco. But in Walnut Creek or down in San Mateo, you might not be able to have that easy transportation. So I put that what I do enjoy about my home. I have a lovely garden. And it's emotional as well as it's practical. So I say you put an E or a P. If it's emotional, memory of events. I like my home because I can remember that meal we had to celebrate Dad's retirement. Or I remember bringing home my first baby in this house. And it's an emotional memory. So I put an E next to it. So you'll have a whole list of things you like about living in your own home and you don't like about living in your existing environment. And you're going to rate them, practical or emotional. I have stairs in my home. San Francisco, if you live in San Francisco, almost every home has a flight of stairs. And that might be, I don't like that. And that's a practical reason why you don't like living there, or you think that that might not be the place for you. Lonely. One thing that happens to many of us as we age, we become single. A spouse dies, there's a divorce, there's something that happens in our family system that leaves us lonely if we're living alone, and that would be an emotional reason, but important. And whether they're practical or emotional, one's not more valuable than the other. It just helps you see that I am staying, I'm making this decision for emotional reasons, or I'm making this decision for practical reasons. Neither one is good or bad, they just are, and they're what you own about your decision-making process. The circle of decision-making, sometimes it's a circle, and we're in it for a long time before we finally come up with the decision that we're going to rest comfortably with. So you make a decision, you explore the ideas, and you evaluate your options. And you might have to do that more than once. And you go around and around till you're comfortable with the decision. And you make a decision, you can always change your mind. It's not forever, but you should really spend a lot of time before you make this decision because it really impacts the quality of your life. So we make decisions because we want to have more fun with somebody we are engaged with, our partner, our spouse. We make these decisions because of financial reasons, and I noticed that the couple that I chose for this slide look really happy, so I'm saying that their stock investments are doing really well, and they could do anything they want to do. And then we've got a couple down here that love home maintenance. That would not be my husband and I. We almost killed each other when we wallpapered once. We said we'd never do that again. So Or maybe it's the traveling and being in nature that's going to lead your decision. So is the cup half full or half empty? This is another inward journey question for you to ask yourself. Do you view life as an adventure? If you do, and you like change, you'll be fine choosing one place, and if it doesn't work, you'll choose another. I worked with a woman a few years back, and I think she lived in every assisted living facility there was. She sampled every single cook, and that was her issue, food. I told her she needed to get her own chef to come a couple of days a week. She's really fussy. Anyway, she finally found something that met her needs and settled down, but she definitely sampled assisted living. But she saw life as an adventure. It wasn't stressful for her. You know, moving and packing for me would be like, I don't want to do it. Do you want to live life its fullest? You know, do you really want to add things to your life and make it full? Know what you want to do, or maybe you're just happy with the way things are. And again, your answer to my question isn't bad or good. It's different. It will be different for each one of us. Every one of us has a different journey, a different path. Look again at what gives your life meaning and purpose. Make sure this is a part of your decision-making process. How can you keep those items in your life and eliminate some of the have-to-dos? I worked with a woman years ago who was a caregiver of her husband and her disabled daughter, not daughter, sister. And every day she made a list, and that list are things she enjoyed doing and things that she had to do. And as she did one of the have-to-dos, she crossed it off and went to the other side and had to do one of the want-to-do, fun-to-do. She added balance to her life. So whatever decision you make, can you eliminate some of those have-to-dos so you can enjoy life to its fullest? That might be helpful in making your decision. Staying at home, I have 9 boxes on my diagram, and I'm going to read through them. If I really was honest with you, I probably would have 90 boxes on this diagram, but you answered yes to most of these 9 that I'm going to go through if you're going to stay in your own home. I feel safe in my home and neighborhood. It's a big reason for a lot of people to move. The neighborhoods have changed and they don't feel safe. So you do feel safe? I have many friends and family near where I live. When I don't feel well, I can employ people to assist me, and I know how to vet them. Very important, how to hire people. Transportation is easy for me from my home. My home is easy to keep up, and I can afford the utilities. Some people on fixed income with limited assets, utilities sometimes really cause them to think about making a different choice where they don't have to pay for the gas and electric, water, and other things that seem to get higher every year. I seldom feel lonely when in my home. I often entertain visitors or I go out. I enjoy home upkeep and household maintenance. And, you know, some people really do enjoy that. They love it. I can leave my home and travel without any cares. I'm confident that I could afford to remain. If I needed care, that I can afford it and remain in my home because of any health status change. Moving to retirement community, again, I have 9 boxes and I could have had 90. I will not have to shop or cook for myself at least one meal a day. Many of the options I'm going to go over with you have at least one meal a day as part of their services to moving into that community. I feel secure in my environment that has a full-service security system. My family's not worried about me living alone. I have the ability to secure care when I am sick or have a need. I never feel lonely, yet have the privacy I need and enjoy. I have the ability to try new activities and travel with a group. The option fits my budget and current needs, and it should say future needs. I don't worry about home expenses, and I can travel without care. I don't have to get somebody to take care of my home while I'm gone. What are the options in senior housing? home care with support options. That's the geriatric care manager that makes home care work, and you could talk to me later about what exactly that is, but care management helps coordinate and find all the services people need, like that emergency response system, like technology that detects falls, or medication dispensing. There are all kinds of new technology coming out to help keep us independent even when we have disabilities. Community support services. All of us are familiar with Meals on Wheels, but there probably are 100 like services there to help keep individuals at home that might need assisted living in a facility, but they can find it and coordinate it with the services in that community. And, of course, in-home care, meaning caregivers, companions, attendants, sometimes skilled nurses, but not necessarily. Usually when somebody needs skilled nursing, they move to a different level of care. Then there are independent senior housing. In our community, I guess, in the Bay Area, Rossmore is a whole community of independent senior housing where you buy your unit called Manors in Rossmore, and you pay a monthly fee, and you're still in independent housing, but there are a lot of amenities there to help bring quality to your life. Lots of activities, lots of interest, that art, that workshop, that ceramics, the water aerobics, tennis, golf, you name it, it's there. So in independent senior housing, it ranged from buying your own unit in a community like Rossmore, living in a complex that's not licensed. That means they don't give any care, but they're licensed independent senior housing, non-licensed independent senior housing. Often they don't provide any meals, but they might have organized activities. The rent is fairly reasonable because you're not paying for any assistance or a lot of additional amenities. And in independent senior housing, it can go from high-end to low-income, middle-income with HUD housing. And this is where, this is the point. I want to give you a phone number. And that's the senior information phone number. And this will connect you with senior information in the state of California in any county you call from. You call today from San Francisco, it's going to get you San Francisco senior information. You call from Walnut Creek, it's going to get you Contra Costa, San Mateo, Marin, whatever county you make the phone call from, it's going to get you connected to that county's senior information, sometimes called Aging and Adult Services. They change the name of it from county to county. And this is some federal monies, Title III of the Older Americans Act monies, to help gather all the services available for seniors, both public, private, and nonprofit. And you would call this number. It's 1-800-510-2020. Perfect vision, okay? That's how I remember that. And you would say, can I have a list of all the independent senior housing, including the HUD housing? And I want to tell you about HUD housing because you only pay 25% of your monthly income for your rent. So it's very, very reasonable. Most often, independent senior housing and HUD housing do not have any meals, but a few HUD housing complexes in the Bay Area do have one meal, maybe Monday through Friday, and it's optional. So again, you're only paying 25% of your income. There's some asset limitations, but you don't have to be totally impoverished to choose that level of care, and it is an option for seniors, but it is an option that has waiting lists with it. So if that's something that you think you would be interested in for yourself or a family member, you want to explore that sooner than later and get your name on a list. And some of these complexes and communities are quite lovely. Life care communities. In San Francisco, we have the Sequoias and the Towers, where you purchase in, you have an apartment, and you have three levels of care: independent living, assisted, and skilled. And some, John, correct me if I'm wrong, have memory care units. You do? Okay, and some now have memory care units. Not always did they. So people that might be wanderers because of their memory problem, there is a place that they can be contained and safe. And these kinds of options are sometimes really good options for couples when one has a problem, such as a memory problem, and the other doesn't. They both can get their needs met in the same community and not have to travel to visit one another. So there's a reason why I like communities that have more than one level of care. And most of them you have to buy in. I saw an advertisement in the Contra Costa Times this morning on one of the continuing care facilities that's now taking people in independent living and skilled without having to purchase in. Is that happening at the Towers as well? No. Okay. And historically, that hasn't happened. It's only for the people that live there. As their needs change, they move from level to level. And then we have assisted living. In California, that's licensed under the community care licensing. It's residential care. I'm going to talk about large residential care and small. Small assisted living facilities are homes in every one of the neighborhoods we probably all live in that we don't know it's, you know, three blocks away from us, licensed for six people. Large assisted living, you see them all the time. They advertise quite frequently. They have lots of different levels of care. And many people choose assisted living when they even don't need assisted living, but they choose that environment for their retirement living because they don't want to have to move if they do need care. And assisted living can keep people to the end of their life. They don't have to go to skilled nursing as long as their needs can be met and they don't disrupt the community that they're living in. They could even have hospice care in assisted living now, and that's probably only in the last maybe 10 years, so that's new. And the small assisted living houses are usually licensed for six people and sometimes a really good option for somebody who's very, very frail. And maybe a big environment with lots of people would be overwhelming and cause anxiety. So that's a quieter environment, and sometimes that's why families and individuals choose the small assisted living homes. The larger assisted living have trips and activities and lots going on in assisted living, active communities. Choosing a home care agency, quickly, I'm going to go know who the employer is. It's really important because when you have a choice of home care, there are registries, and most people in the public don't understand the difference between a registry and a home care agency. In a registry, you are the employer, so the liability is yours. You might pay $5 an hour less, but there's some liability to you, and you just need to understand the difference in an agency that pays all the taxes and a registry where even though you're paying them, you're still the employer. So know about that. Know about the length of time that the company was in business. You probably want a company that's been in business for at least 5 years. I know people need to get a start somehow, but getting experience working with caring for people in the home makes the company more credible, actually. So you want to know about length of time in business, who owns the company and their background. Ask for references and a copy of liability insurance. Understand the contract you're signing. Ask questions. Know what benefits and training are given to caregivers. Ask about background checks and experience of caregivers. Are they supervised and by whom? And do they have certified professional geriatric care managers on staff? And I believe this is important, and I know I'm really biased because I think geriatric care managers make home care work. But what's important to me is when home care is no longer working, that the care manager helps that individual or that family member then do one of the choosing of the next level of care. With my clients over the last 20 years, I've been with some of them for 15 years, and maybe it was 5 years in their own home and 5 or 10 years in assisted living, and then maybe they're a brittle diabetic and they had to go to skilled, but they've had our care and advocacy all that time, and a geriatric care manager is just going to move them on to that next level of care for financial reasons or care needs because they're objective professionals. They're not just trying to get income and caregiving. They want what's best for the client. So that's why it's important to ask, does that agency, as you know, I'm the president of this National Association of Geriatric Care Managers, so I want to see, you know, us have, you know, 4,000 instead of 2 by the end of the year. The cost of retirement living options is important. Home care in the Bay Area costs anywhere from $20 to $30 an hour. Live-in 24/7 care is usually less by out per. You're not paying per hour; you pay per day, and so it's a lot less. Does the agency again have certified geriatric care managers to make it work? And is it covered in the cost of caregiving, or is it additional? The continuing care, retirement communities, the life care, you buy in from a low of $55,000. That was the lowest I could find, and up depending on the apartment that you're buying and the level of care that you're going to need. And then you have monthly fees from $2,300, and that's pretty low, I think. It's probably about $3,300 to $9,300 for a couple. Small residential care, those are the little homes that are in all of our neighborhoods, from $1,800 to $9,000. If it was the master suite in a lovely area, it could be very expensive. Assisted living, again, from a very base rate of $2,400 to $3,900. Then you have additional levels of care. Just medication management might be one service or level one, and all the different services cost another amount of money. And you really want to know about base rent and what all the levels cost when you're exploring your options. Skilled nursing and semi-private in the Bay Area is between $255 and $400 a day, and private is from $255 to $475 a day. And you don't have a whole lot of privacy in skilled nursing. You don't have your own apartment. You might have your own room in a private skilled nursing, but often the door is open because they need to pay attention to if something goes awry with your health to bring you the care you need. So I want you to go and look at these options, even if you think you want to stay in your own home all the days of your life, and you've written that in your legal documents, and that's what you want for yourself. I still think we all need to explore. Take a tour. Take a couple of tours. Have a meal in one of the communities that's closest to you. Know what it looks like. And also take a tour of skilled nursing. And if you need help finding small residential care homes to look at, I could give you some examples of places to look, or the senior information number I gave you earlier could. The Ombudsman Services is one of the mediators between problems in skilled nursing and assisted living. They can give you a list of places, and you can get the Ombudsman's name through that senior information. That one number I gave you is a place where you can get those numbers. So you want to get quotes on prices and care levels and the base rent. You want to ask about emergency plans. I was working with a fireman around his mom, and he asked me what their fire policy was in a facility, and I said, I don't know. I've never asked. So you want to ask those questions. What would they do in a crisis, earthquake? What do they do? Terrorism, we have to add that now, too. So what is their plan if there's a major emergency? Ask about pets and guests. Some senior complexes have guest rooms, so your daughter from New York, when she comes to visit, can stay in the guest room. Others don't. Some communities accept pets, and sometimes there's a weight limit on those pets. You know, they'll take a 35-pound or less dog, but any bigger dogs, you can't move in with you. So ask questions, and those questions will be based on, again, what gives meaning and purpose to your life, What gives you a lot of contentment and pleasure? I love my pets. I would like to have pets wherever I live. So that would be important to me, and I would ask that question. And transportation, when you can no longer drive, you want to ask, what's the arrangement? Is it a concierge? Can I go down and say, take me to Nordstrom's, or take me, you know, to a doctor appointment on the spot, or do I have to make reservations? And if you do drive, ask about parking and security for your car and easy access in and out of that garage. So it is now time for your questions, and there is a roving mic, I understand, somewhere. There it is. Questions. I went through that quick. Yes. You want to take the mic? She's going to bring to the mic.
We'd like to remind our listening audience this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you are listening to Linda Fedrini Johnson, The Great Debate, Move to Retirement or Stay Home.
Thank you. Your question.
Can you comment on family decisions of family living across the country and whether or when to relocate closer to family?
Family decisions. When family lives on one end of the country and the aging family member lives someplace and the adult child lives another, I would have a family meeting, find a geriatric care manager wherever you, mom is or you are, get together and talk about some of these questions. Bring this little handout from the talk with you. And make sure that you know what gives mom value in her life, what's important for her. Sometimes it's your hairdresser or your colorist or your massage therapist, or maybe it's your friends, your church or your synagogue. Something, and moving away from that would be terrible. So you want to arrange services for mom to stay in the community if the community gives her life meaning and purpose. If it no longer does, and being with her family, seeing her grandchildren grow up, finding a community where the daughter or the son lives might be a better option. But do it together. Make that decision together as a family. I've worked with lots of families with these kinds of decisions.
How does one become a client of a geriatric care manager, and what does it cost?
Okay, good question. You may become a client of a geriatric care manager by call me, or go onto the website of the National Association, which is caremanager.org, put in your zip code, and you'll get a list of people and their professional categories, and you might, I don't know how you would choose somebody, maybe by length of time, looking at their website and their background and their experience. And across the country, the cost of a geriatric care manager is from $100 an hour to $200 an hour. And I could talk to you personally. I don't usually talk about fees, but that's when I talk to the Wall Street Journal or some other national magazine, that's what we say in our organization, somewhere between that. And as many of you know, Gail Sheehy is traveling the country right now with her Passages of Caregiving book. And Gail says spending 2 to 3 hours with a geriatric care manager might be the best money you ever spent. Thank you, Gail. My profession thanks you. But it really is true. I remember a daughter coming to see me recently about her mom in Oklahoma. She told me she was sending her mom $1,500 a month to help mom and dad live in the retirement community they were in. And when I gathered the information from her, number one, I think her mom was misdiagnosed. I think her mom needed to go to a hospital. I like hospital diagnostic centers, especially for memory loss. And I believe that her mother had a Lewy body dementia, a whole other lecture here, but that she wasn't being treated for. And when I asked more questions of this daughter about her parents, I wasn't seeing the parents. Dad was a veteran. They were entitled to $1,600 a month. $1,600 a month she paid me for 1 hour of time. How much money did she get for that 1 hour? A lot. So knowing benefits and entitlements is really important. So it's a a good use of your money to spend some time with a geriatric care manager. It doesn't have to be me. I have lots of wonderful colleagues in this profession.
Thank you. Well, to follow up on that, I was interested to hear you say that you've tracked clients for 15 years and moved from level to level. How does that work? Each time you talk with them, there's a fee, or is there an annual fee and you watch after them for that to know when they need something
else? A lot of people might do this differently. I believe in charging people for only the time they use. They don't pay an annual fee. We have a program called Living Your Values, and it's a very low-cost fee that we're kind of like on hold for people that just want us in the background. We're not providing any service for them. Some people come for a consultation just once every 3 months. And the people that I've tracked and been with and been an advocate and definitely part of their family system, we might see 2 hours or 4 hours every month all their life. And hospital discharges, you probably know, that's the most critical time when you need an advocate. And that's where geriatric care managers is going to be worth their weight in gold to make sure. My aunt just got discharged from Kaiser in San Francisco to try to get back to her home in Rossmore. And the physician prescribed something to her that she had to cut the pill in eighths. Can you imagine? No. And then the physician didn't know how to order in another place because it was a resident physician. So that is the time where she had advocacy. You need advocacy when you're being discharged because things can go awry, and that's where people get rehospitalized. You have a question, too.
Yeah, just wondering, how do you make a decision for somebody who's elderly and they have some dementia and you're not sure they're making the proper decision?
How do you make a decision for somebody that's elderly and they're not making good decisions, probably based on a progressive dementia that's maybe not diagnosed yet? Well, you could, again, use a geriatric care manager to get the dialogue going. You can use adult protective services if you think somebody's a danger to themselves or others, and the county will send in a social worker to assess that. But sometimes you need a legal tool to make decisions for people. All of us have a right to folly. In this country, we can do silly, stupid things. And it's okay. However, if we're impaired because of a progressive cognitive problem, somebody else has to be the substitute decision maker. And that usually is a family member. And sometimes a family member has to step in and go for conservatorship in order to take control and make decisions for that person. One of my newsletters, hopefully you all sign up. There's an evaluation sheet in the packet that the people in this audience have. And I'm sorry that the listeners at home don't, but you could always call me and get put on our mailing list. It's eldercareanswers.com is our website. But I do a newsletter, I think that's important information that all of us need to know. Some of them are questions, but the last one was taking the keys away. I didn't include that for this group because I didn't think you'd be dealing with taking car keys away from someone else. But if you are, I'll send you that article. But you have to have legal powers to be able to do that. And sometimes we can work with somebody in our family and convince them, rationalize with them to make a better decision. But if you're having cognitive changes, the ability to rationalize is impaired. So it's a no-win conversation. So it sometimes has to be strategic and a strategy planned by a family. There was another question.
I've heard that some of these life care facilities have kind of age cutoffs, that if you get beyond, say, 80, they won't take you.
John, what would you answer for the tower's cutoff age for life care?
In the past, that's been true. But in the current economy, and with the fact that 80 is the new 60, that's not necessarily true. So don't rule yourself out.
Okay, 80 is the new 60. Is that good news? And probably 25% of us in this room will live to be 100. Be prepared. There's another question somewhere.
You mentioned that number for California. Is that same number good in any state?
No, I don't know that. I know California very well. But if you call that number in your county and say, would you give me the senior information equivalent to you in Kansas City, Kansas, they'll give it to you. The Elder Care Locator, I mean, I think it's eldercarelocator.com on the internet. They'll also get you connected to the senior services in the county that you're concerned about. A geriatric care manager, by going on that caremanager.org website and putting in a zip code of where your family member lives in another state, you could just call a care manager and say, what's the senior information number in your – they're going to be helpful and give you that, too, another way of getting connected.
Okay. And second question. The costs are – a lot. I mean, they're high. What are the options for those that really can't afford those costs?
Well, the HUD housing. HUD housing is for people that can't afford the assisted living and the different retirement living options that I talked about earlier and don't have a home, don't have any equity to tap on. There's the HUD housing. Remember, you got to get on a waiting list for that. And if you have skilled needs in California, and you're down to $2,000 and you're a single individual, you can get skilled nursing covered by the state and federal government called, under Medi-Cal. But that's in skilled nursing. That's not in a desirable living environment because you don't have much privacy. If you're a veteran, there are some veterans options to veterans. And Masons, there's an option for Masons. So there's lots of other options for people of all income means. They're out there. They are out there.
Hi.
Hi.
In the past few years, there's been a movement for aging in community, and people are establishing, if I might say, local infrastructure, community neighborhood infrastructure in the Northeast Quadrant in San Francisco. Next, the Northeast Exchange Team, of which I'm a part,
okay,
is building from a pre-existing community, in a, actually. People who live in urban areas know each other, or at least in San Francisco, know each other. They see people at cafes. They go to the same movies. They all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this man's question about the cost of moving into the towers, for instance, or the Heritage even, which is much less expensive.
Sure.
At a different sort of social milieu. There's a great middle. The boomers are coming along, and there are a whole lot of us. And there's not going to be enough care. There's not going to be enough housing, assisted living housing, and that sort of thing for us to, even if we can afford it possibly, to find those sorts of resources. And so it seems that we're going to have to, once again, build our own. Have you worked with aging and community projects? Do you know about them? Can you talk to us about what we're doing, essentially?
Right. There is the San Francisco Village concept. You know about that?
Right. We're working with Beacon
okay.
Hill Village. And
that's a group of people. They pay $30 a month, and it's kind
they
of like
$50 a month.
It went up. $50 a month, and there's some benefits to that when they need help. And so I felt like I could have paid you to ask me that question because I wanted to talk about creativity. I was talking to a gentleman before I started talking. I said, the baby boomers are going to be creative. And there's something called Fiercely Independent Elders, FIEs, and they're getting together, small group of people, and forming their own little communities. I am of Swedish descent, and so is my husband, and we went to Sweden a few years back. In every community, in San Francisco, I think is ideal for this. I worked on the mayor's Alzheimer's dementia expert panel last year, and because we have distinct neighborhoods and we have a library and maybe a senior center and we have neighborhoods, you could actually do something like this neighborhood by neighborhood that could be very inexpensive. And in Sweden, when you don't feel good, you just call that center and they bring you a meal. You don't have to sign up for the meals. You don't have to be on a waiting list for 14 years or months or days. You just call when you don't feel good. They send the nurse if you feel dizzy. You know, so everything is contained in that neighborhood. So I think we need to be creative, and if it isn't there, make it. Make it happen. Thank you.
Okay. Unfortunately, we've reached a point in our program where there's time for only two last questions. Two questions.
One here. I got one of them. This might tie in with the last question. What do you know about group housing? Apparently, there's one in Oakland. I don't believe there's one here. Maybe it's a social movement, but why hasn't it taken off? What do you know about it?
Well, what do I know about group housing? It's called co-housing. If you looked it up on the internet, you would see co-housing. I had a client that had a husband with a brain impairment, serious brain impairment, and she moved into co-housing. She bought her house, and there was the helping of one another that was natural. There was a community meal once a week, and people took turns cooking it. So co-housing is a little bit of that village concept, but it's contained in that housing complex. And again, if you're researching that on the internet, go to cohousing.com and see what you're going to come up with. I don't know them all, but I could do research too. But it's an interesting concept.
Can I speak to that?
Mm-hmm.
We've had a gentleman here that's come to our programs before named Raines, R-A-I-N-E-S, Cohen. Raines Cohen is in Berkeley, and he's probably one of the most knowledgeable people about co-housing. So if you want to search or do research, I'd look for Raines Cohen.
Great. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your information. But I was hoping when I was coming today that you're going to bring some representatives here from Sequoia or from Towers or from baby boomers who are organizing all this. Because, like the gentleman asked, what is the age limit? I'm sure every place is different. But I was hoping for that. It's more a statement than a question.
Yeah. My talk, it was the great debate, and it's the debate within yourself, not a debate between the Sequoias and the Towers. But we could do that. Where's your wife? With John and his wife. But feel free to ask me any questions via my website, and I'll answer them for you.
Thank you.
And if you want a debate like that, John can arrange it.
They're both wonderful.
They are both wonderful.
Our thanks to Linda Ferdrini Johnson, Executive Director of Elder Care Services. Let's thank her for her comments today.
They can ask me more questions.
We also thank our audience here as well as those listening to the recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 106th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.